This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. Looking forward to today's episode as we welcome on and welcome back Phil Steele. He will be breaking down the Big 12 conference with us. So looking forward to that conversation as we get into some favorite win totals from Phil and everything you would want to know about the Big 12. And I already recorded that interview. So like the last time we talked to Phil, which was regarding an Iowa win total, he pushed me over the top on a win total. And we're going to get to that a little bit later on here in this segment. But as always, please rate, review, and subscribe. A salute again to you guys. Thank you for the 5-star reviews. Let's keep it rolling. And just a reminder, the VSiN College Football Betting Guide comes out later this week, August 1st. So make sure to head on over to VSiN.com and check out all of the options that we have for you. I'll just say this. Adam Burke, you know from this podcast, has been busting his ass on that guide. Jonathan Von Tobel, my co-host of VSiN Primetime, he previewed the Big 12, the Pac-2, as well as the Mountain West. Wes Reynolds, Matt Eumann, Zachary Cohen. I threw in a couple previews, but I left it to the pros. Steve Mackinnon, best bets from all of us. So make sure you check that out this Thursday, August 1st. To close the pod, I will run through a couple of my write-ups. I was given the task of the Independents, mainly write about Notre Dame, but I did write about UConn and UMass. So we'll do that a little bit later on in this podcast. And hopefully you guys have been riding with me on some of these season win totals. And I got a kick last week out of Big Ten Media Day. One of our win totals, which was under 5.5 for UCLA. I believe the juice we had on the podcast was around -145. We got this gem from head coach Deshaun Foster. And I don't know about you, but I was feeling all right after this opening remark at Big Ten Media Day about our under win total.
I'm happy to be here. Glad to be a part of this great conference. Finally putting two great emblems together, UCLA and the Big Ten. We're a school that's won, 123 championships. So this fits us being right in this conference. Football-wise, we're just excited. You know, I'm sure you guys don't know too much about UCLA, but our football program, but we're in LA. It's us and USC. I'm just basically excited, really. That's it. Any questions?
All right. That was low-hanging fruit. I know. It was just out there. I told producer Wyatt and producer Ryan to grab that soundbite from Deshaun Foster to throw it in there. He did redeem himself as the day went on. I know CBS Sports wrote an article following him around, and he talked about, hey, I'm going to have to take some jokes on social media. But, you know, if you hadn't heard the explanation, it has nothing to do with what we heard at Big Ten Media Day from Deshaun Foster. It's the fact that he was dealt a really challenging hand in multiple fronts, where you're looking at a schedule difference of 66 spots, according to Phil Steele, from last year's schedule difficulty to this year's schedule difficulty, which is considered number 2 in the country entering this year. You're also replacing a very, very talented defensive coordinator in D'Anton Lynn, who goes to crosstown rival USC. And I look at that schedule, man, at LSU, Oregon, at Penn State, at Nebraska, at home to Iowa, home to USC, wrap up the season against Fresno State, open up the year on the road at Hawaii. And that's the last thing I wanted to hit on here, because at this point, we've probably missed the boat if you haven't jumped in on this under win total. You know, maybe we can look at some different markets as we get closer to the season. But the week one game against Hawaii is the biggest mover in the market. And we talked about it about a month ago when the number was 17, you could have grabbed it as high as 18.5. Look, I think we've missed the mark here on this one too, folks. And I almost think UCLA could potentially be the side, because the biggest thing to note here about this game is not the awkward press conference we got from Deshaun Foster at Big Ten Media Day. It's the fact that Hawaii's leading receiver, Stephen McBride, is suspended indefinitely and is dealing with some serious off-field issues. And Timmy Chang, as well as the Hawaii administration, came out and said, this is a serious matter, and he's suspended indefinitely, and he was the leading receiver for Hawaii just a year ago. So at 13, I don't know. I think you've missed the boat, and maybe you take UCLA minus 12.5, 13, and you could set yourself up for a middle. But I had to grab the low-hanging fruit there with Deshaun Foster and play that clip for you guys, and hopefully we're feeling all right and cashing an under 5.5 win total. Speaking of win total, we're going to talk about the Big 12 with Phil Steele, as mentioned at the top of the podcast here, but I want to take a look at Houston, and we will talk about Houston with Phil towards the end of our conversation. And last week on the podcast, I talked about a market that I started to dive into, and I totally recognize that not every state has conference win totals. I know Illinois has it. I think there are some others out there. DraftKings, if you look at the tab underneath, has conference win totals. And we'll start to see more and more of these percolate. But ultimately, we played under 2.5 conference wins for Duke, as opposed to under 5.5 wins, because the market had moved from 6.5 down to 5.5. But at 2.5, I still felt like it was a relatively good play. And we'll talk about that play with Phil Steele coming up. I've got another under conference win total that I do like, and it's in the Big 12, and it's the Houston Cougars. Willie Fritz comes over from Tulane after a hell of a run with the Green Wave, and I love the hire for Houston, bringing in Willie Fritz, and I think a lot of people really like the hire, but the schedule's really challenging. The schedule, according to Phil Steele, is the fifth most difficult in the country. According to our guy Brad Powers, it's the seventh most difficult in the country. And you look at their win total for the full season, it is down from 4.5 down to 3.5. And I know Brad and some other folks out there banged that under 4.5. And now it sits at under 3.5, minus 60 to the over. Well, they play two non-conference games where they are a favorite, UNLV and Rice. But if you look at the conference win total market, it's 2.5, shaded a minus 135 to the under. Houston, a 4-8 team just a year ago and won two conference games a year ago, is a team that enters post-spring, rated by Bill Conley, 79th in the country. And this is a team that does return its quarterback in Donovan Smith, but only returns a total of 10 starters. And then let's look at the schedule. From a 4-8 team just a year ago, 2-7 in conference play, they play five of the seven teams with the best odds to win this conference, including the two favorites in Utah and Kansas State. And they get both Utah and Kansas State at home. And when I look at teams that are towards the bottom of a conference, I want those toss-up games to be at home. And I want the games we know they're going to lose to be on the road. And the fact that Utah and Kansas State are both at home is not ideal. Also in back-to-back weeks, the stretch of late October into early November at Kansas, Arrowhead Stadium, Utah and Kansas State, they're going to be around a two-touchdown underdog in all of those games. They also have Arizona on the road. And then let's look at the possible toss-up games. Arizona State, where are you? Oh, you're not on the schedule. They don't play arguably the second-worst team in the conference in Arizona State. Okay, what about BYU? Last game of the season, on the road. Now, I think you could play devil's advocate here. What is BYU up to at that point in the year? What is the status of Kalani Sitake? Could he have been fired at that point? Fair question to ask. Still going to be an underdog in that game. What about Baylor? They get Baylor, and they get him at home. Baylor's a team that I think is interesting. I know Jonathan Von Tobel, who wrote up the Big 12 for our VSiN College Football Betting Guide, is high on Baylor. Relatively speaking, there'll be an underdog at home, I think, against Baylor. Jake Spavadal comes in. Now you could say that Dave Aranda is adios at that point. Okay, I'll listen to that. And then Cincinnati, you got to go to historic Nippert Stadium on September 21st, another maybe toss-up game if you get them at home. Looking at what my guy Brad Powers puts out there as power ratings, and make sure to check out his guide. I know he tweeted about it, at BradPowers7. He's got an underdog in every single game of at least four or more. I look at this schedule. I love Willie Fritz. I like the hire, but I don't see three conference wins coming this way. So we're going to add another win total to our ledger for the college football season. And we'll need to recap all of our win totals that we've been giving out all throughout the preseason here. But we're going to add Houston under 2.5 wins, minus 135, to a best bet here. And we'll talk more about Houston and the Big 12 coming up next. Phil Steele going to join the podcast. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, he's back after popular demand. Phil Steele joins the program, and we are going to preview the Big 12. Of course, it is beach season, if you haven't gotten it by now. I highly recommend, as I hit my beach vacation here shortly, to head to Barnes & Noble or Books A Million or philsteele.com to get the Phil Steele preview magazine. He joins us right now. Follow him on Twitter, at philsteele042. Phil, I don't know what people do, if they just start from page one and they go to their favorite team, but I'll give you the truth here. The first thing I do when I get your magazine is I go to the surprise teams just to kind of get the gears going for, you know, who could surprise us a little bit here. I want to just go through the process of how you come about your surprise teams. You've been doing this portion in your magazine for years, and how you go about ranking those teams. What's the justification for those teams, for the surprise teams in your magazine?
Yeah, the first criteria, Tim, is that they cannot be a preseason top 10 team. So I eliminate all of those. And every February for the last, I think, 14 years, I've been predicting the AP top 10 in February. And we've had 95% success rate. So I'm pretty confident of who the 10 teams will be in the AP poll. So once I eliminate those, they say, okay, who's not in the top 10 that I think should be or has a chance of competing for the national title? And that's how we get to the surprise teams. As an example, this year, Utah number one, Clemson number two, Florida State number three. None of those teams will be preseason top 10, but they're all legitimate national title contenders.
So let's get into it. Let's get into Utah, Kyle Whittingham. We heard the news come out at Big 12 Media Day. There is now a coach in waiting. He has been one of the most successful coaches in the FBS ranks. You look at this Utah team, you've got them number one in the Big 12. You've got them going to the college football playoff, because if they win the Big 12, they're going to the college football playoff. This is a team, win total sitting around 9.5 at multiple markets. They are the favorite, but still north of 3-1 to win the Big 12. What about Utah makes you have them not only number one in the Big 12, but as your number one surprise team?
Yeah, I think it starts with the fact that they lost five games last year. So you wouldn't expect much from a team that lost five games. But, you know, there was stuff behind that. First of all, last year, the Pac-12 was actually right there with the SEC and the Big Ten. It was the best the Pac-12 had been in 15 years. And Utah had to play most of the big boys on the road last year. They played Oregon State, USC, Washington, Arizona, all on the road. Also, there was a nondescript injury in August, which was their backup quarterback going down. Then Cam Rising didn't play. Now you're down to your third, fourth, and even in one game, their fifth string quarterback started. Teams could stack the line against them, and they didn't really have to worry about the pass. Well, this year, Cam Rising's back. That backup quarterback, Brandon Rose, is back. They also add in Sam Hurd, who was my number two rated quarterback out of high school. And originally signed at Washington, went to Cal Poly and did well last year. So they're much deeper at QB. Cam Rising led Utah to a pair of Pac-12 titles prior to missing last year. They also lost one of their top receivers, Brant Keithy, prior to the year last year. He's back as well. Under Whittingham, they're always strong at the line of scrimmage, both offensive and defensive lines. Every year when I go over the team with Coach Witt, he's always talking about the strength there, and they are very strong. And defensively, they're always good. Special teams have been on the rise. I rate in the number 29 special teams. And then you look at the schedule. Most of the tough games are in Rice-Eccles, where they've only lost two home games the last 5 years. Toughest road game is at Oklahoma State. I rate that a toss-up. But overall, I like the over on the 9.5 for Utah. And I think this is a team that has the potential to even run the table.
Yeah, you look at no Kansas State, no Kansas, and no Texas Tech for Utah. Going from the Pac-12 to the Big 12 this year for Utah, you pointed out, and I think this for me as a bettor, I take a look at the discrepancy a lot from 1 year to the next. And it was a big reason why I bet UCLA under, Phil, was the massive difference in schedule strength from last year to this year as they go from the Pac-12 to the Big 10. What do you look at from a schedule strength difference for Utah from last year to this year?
Yeah, actually, their schedule strength gets easier moving from the Pac-12 to the Big 12. They're all the way down at number 59 on my schedule strength. So I think it's a step down for them schedule-wise, and I do like that wager you have on UCLA under. I think that last year they played the easiest schedule in the Pac-12, and now they're playing one of the toughest schedules in the Big 10.
Yeah, and you know, looking at Utah – just keep this in mind because there are conference win total markets out there. Utah-Baylor, not a conference game. So just keep that in the back of your mind out there.
Good point.
If you're betting into that market. And the same goes for Kansas State as they will play Arizona in a non-conference game September 13th. A lot of excitement for the Purple Cats this year heading into another year under Chris Klieman. They go to Avery Johnson. He's getting Heisman buzz just because of the athleticism there. As they said, hey, it's okay, Will Howard, you can move on. You look at their schedule, they get to play, you know, no offense to the bottom teams, but they get to play BYU, Houston, Arizona State, and Cincinnati, four of the worst teams believed to be in this conference. So, you know, Chris Klieman has done a really good job since coming in from North Dakota State. They are the second favorite to win this conference, Phil, per the odds around plus 390. What do you expect from Kansas State this year?
Yeah, I think they're a legitimate Big 12 contender. And ironically, Will Howard is a Heisman candidate at Ohio State, but he was going to lose his starting job to Avery Johnson. And so, you know, you got to think, hey, Kansas State's in pretty good shape. They also brought in Taquan Roberson from UConn to back him up, another mobile quarterback. So I like that move. They've got DJ Giddens at running back. The receiving core, they have more depth at receiver than they've had in years past. So I think they will be able to utilize Avery Johnson's throwing. The offensive line, they did lose a lot of talent up front. They've only got two starters back there, but Coach Klieman was very comfortable with it. And defensively, they're strong. I mean, they've got a couple NFL guys like Jordan Riley at safety and Uso Simolo at the defense tackle spot are NFL caliber guys. Special teams are strong also, and the schedule looks good. In fact, they make my going up box for easier schedule this year on page 27 of the magazine. Don't have to face Utah and played a tougher schedule last year. So overall, I've got Kansas State right up there. I've got them tied for second in the Big 12. I think Utah plays either Kansas State or probably the next team we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and as we look at Kansas State's schedule, there's a chance they're a favorite in every single game with Oklahoma State coming to town, Arizona as well, Kansas too. I was curious about Kansas State from a coordinator standpoint. Colin Klein, who was very highly thought of, Notre Dame made a run after him 2 years ago. He declined and stayed at his alma mater, but ultimately he does leave to go join Mike Elko's staff. When you're going through the process, Phil, how much did that weigh into your prediction of this Kansas State team that they will have a new offensive coordinator this year?
You know, I like the fact that they brought in a co-offensive coordinator in Matt Wells. Mm-hmm. And Matt Wells was a guy that did tremendous things at Utah State and Texas Tech as a head coach. And so that's a really nice thing to add to the offensive coordinator position. I don't think it's a step down at all. I think it'd be a little different offense, but I'd say they still have a quality offensive coordinator.
Well, from a betting standpoint, Phil, no team has moved more in the odds market than Oklahoma State. You could have got them as high as 12-1 earlier this summer. And as of record, Circus, it's at plus 650, DraftKings at plus 750. So there's been a lot of momentum, a lot of money coming in on the Pokes heading into this upcoming year. Mike Gundy, as you well know, just always seems to deliver. Last year, after a surprising butt whipping at the hands of South Alabama, still found a way to get it to the Big 12 championship game. Alan Bowman is back. Ollie Gordon is back. Obviously, Ollie Gordon dealing with some off the field issues, but Mike Gundy cleared that up and said he will play. He will not be suspended after what happened earlier this summer. So you're looking at an Oklahoma State team, win total at 8.5 or 8, depending on where you look. They do play 5 conference road games this year. What do you expect from the Pokes? Because, Phil, there's a lot of hype surrounding this Oklahoma State team entering this year.
Yeah, and as well, there should be, Tim. And I got to tell you, last year, they were sort of a money machine for my Inside the Press Box newsletter, because I played them against Kansas State, called for the outright upset. They got it, and then just played them each week, and they delivered against Kansas, West Virginia, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, pulling 4 outright upsets in 5 weeks. So they were a money machine for me. I absolutely loved them last year. And I did an article on philsteele.com last week, a blog, which talked about how teams go from one experience to the other and the difference it makes. Last year, they were number 115 on my experience chart. This year, they're number 1. They've got 19 returning starters coming back. Ollie Gordon's back. The receiver room's back. Alan Bowman's back at QB. And let's face it, Alan Bowman was an average quarterback last year. He had 15 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, completed 60%, hand the ball off to Ollie Gordon, get out of the way. But I think he'll be a better quarterback this year. I love the linebacking core with Oliver, Daniels, and Martin, probably 2 of the 3, maybe all 3 NFL prospects. This is a very experienced Oklahoma State team. Now, they do play Kansas State on the road. They play TCU on the road, a couple of tough games. But they are clearly a Big 12 title contender this year as well.
You know, Phil, as we continue to break down this conference, and I've said it and I continue to believe it, I think the Big 12 is going to be the most fascinating, intriguing conference in the country this year, because it doesn't feel like you have a superpower. You can make the argument that Utah and Kansas State are the two best teams, and the odds would reflect it a little bit. But you look at UCF, Kansas, Iowa State, Arizona, Texas Tech, they're all still in that 12-14-1 range. What's just your, before we dive into more teams, your belief of this conference, and how many teams would you say legitimately could win the Big 12 this year?
I'm going to say 10 wow. have that opportunity. And if you ask me to make a case for any of the 10, I could do so, Tim. You know, Kansas, if Jalen Daniels stays healthy, UCF, if all these transfers come in and have the expected impact, Joey McGuire at Texas Tech's always dangerous. TCU just 2 years ago was playing in the national title game, and they like what they have there. West Virginia was picked last year, but they've got the run game and the quarterback. Arizona probably would have been the preseason favorite to win the Big 12 had they not lost their coach and a bunch of players to Washington. And Iowa State, it's probably Matt Campbell's best team. So I'd say this team, or this conference, goes 10 deep in teams that could potentially win it.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch it. It's going to be awesome to see how this conference plays out. So let's run through it. There's no real particular order. I'll just go with the order that you put them in your magazine. So we'll go to Iowa State. It feels like Matt Campbell's at his best when people write him off. You know, I think back to a couple of years ago when they had, you know, preseason hype where they were a top 10 team in the country. And that year they ended up going 7-6 back in 2021. So Phil, you bring back Rocco Becht. They had to deal with the gambling scandal last offseason that might have bled over into the regular season, but they started to play better football. They wrapped up the year with a win at Kansas State. They did lose their bowl game. Iowa State entering this year, sitting around 10-1 or so to win this conference, win total at 7.5. What do you expect from the Clones in 2024?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you brought up 21, Tim, and I'll get to that in a minute. But I've been going over the teams with Matt Campbell for all 13 years he's been a head coach, dating back to Toledo. And this is probably the one year that he's probably the most optimistic, I would say. You know, almost every position, when we got to the wrap-up part, he would either say, hey, this is the most experienced, this is the deepest, this is the best unit we've had since I've been here at Iowa State. And I agree. They are a very talented, deep team. They rank up there in the experience chart, number 3. Last year, they were number 80. And last year, I mean, they had a quarterback thrown into the fire, and Rocco Becht wasn't expected to start, started, and got better as the year went on. Sama emerged at the running back spot late in the year. They've got some dangerous receivers. The offensive line is solid. Defense is great. And even the special teams rates up there. So I think that I compared this. I talked to Coach Campbell about it. I said, in 2020, your team went 9-3, finished number 9. You were number 7 in the country heading into 2021. All this talent's back, and you went 7-6. They did have 5 close losses that year, Tim, so it wasn't a disaster. But I said, this year you've got that same type of talent, but you don't have the buzz, which is when Matt Campbell does his best work. And so they're under the radar, probably won't be in anybody's preseason top 25 heading into the year. But I think this team's very dangerous, and it might be the best team Matt Campbell's had at Iowa State. And keep in mind, he had a team that finished number 9 in the country in 2020.
I was talking to Chris Williams from Iowa Everywhere, who covers Iowa State. And, I asked him the question, Phil, that November 9th game at Arrowhead, is that going to be more Iowa State fans than Kansas fans? He said, oh, without a doubt. So we'll jump to Kansas here, because this is a team win total sitting at 8. I mean, who doesn't love Lance Leipold, what he's been able to do every stop of the way, whether it was winning D3 titles or, taking Buffalo to, high heights there in the MAC. But not having a home field, I think, is going to be interesting from a handicapping perspective. And you alluded to it. Jalen Daniels, it's the if can he stay healthy, and they don't have that safety net of Jason Bean like they've had for the past couple of years. So as we jump to Kansas, no home field, I've gotten to the point where I don't want to doubt Lance Leipold ever, but I have some skepticism this year, just because you lose your offensive coordinator, you don't have a home field advantage, and your quarterback, very talented, but oft injured.
Yeah, and it's a back injury, Tim, which concerns me a little bit, because that was the problem last year, and the problem still exists. So, it's not completely cured. They've said he's 100% healthy heading into the year. There's still days where he wakes up and it's tough to get out of bed. I wonder if that's going to last all 12 weeks of the season. Plus, you've got a quarterback that uses his legs a lot. So it's I wonder about that situation. And you hit it right on the head. No Jason Bean as a backup quarterback. Cole Ballard looked okay last year when they played against Kansas State, but he's not Jalen Daniels. Now, going over the squad with Coach Leipold, I mean, this is a veteran squad. They've got seniors throughout every position, senior. If they're not going to do it this year, then I wonder when they do it. You also hit on the home thing, which was a factor in me picking Kansas lower than everybody else. I've got them tied for 7th in the Big 12. But, I mean, 4 games in Arrowhead, 2 in a soccer stadium. Do they have the home field edge? I agree with you 100% on that Iowa State game. Iowa State may just have the crowd edge for that one.
Oh, yeah.
So I did pick Kansas lower, but it's scary because, yeah, you touched on Lance Leipold is a hell of a coach, and Jalen Daniels is a hell of a quarterback, and that combination with this veteran team could be tough. So I'm sort of staying away from Kansas as far as over-unders.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I think back to 2022 and what a year they had. They got to a bowl game and they had a lot of close wins. And I talked about it a lot on this podcast about maybe they're going to regress. And obviously they did not. They won 8 regular season games, thumped UNLV in their bowl game. So I'm with you. While I am not high on Kansas, I don't think I'm bullish enough to go against Kansas heading into this upcoming year. A lot of other teams to jump to. Let's jump to Arizona. They lose Jed Fish. They bring in Brent Brennan. I love the hire of Dino Babers coming in as their offensive coordinator. They're able to keep Noah Fafita. They're able to keep McMillan, who is arguably the best wide receiver in the country. I know my friend Nate Tice from Yahoo Sports has him as the best pro prospect wide receiver entering this year. Arizona, I'm up and down on them because I love Brent Brennan. I've gotten an opportunity to interview him a couple times. He's as cool as they come, just from a guy, But this is going to be a unique challenge for the Wildcats in year one. So what do you expect from Arizona? You're looking at a win total anywhere from 7.5 to 8 for the Wildcats this year.
Yeah, and when I went through the team, Tim, what I do every year is after I get rid of the magazine, send it off to the press, I go through every game for the upcoming season, determine if I got a team favored or an underdog in a game. I've got Arizona favored in 8 games and underdog in 4. So once again, this is one of those where I'd be right at the total. I think holding on to Fifita and McMillan was massive. If those two guys left, it would have been everybody off the board and gone. But when those two opted to stay, some talent did indeed stay. And then Brennan hit the transfer portal hard. You know, you look at the running backs with Krosky Merritt coming in from New Mexico, a very underrated running back. Kwali Connolly coming in from San Jose State, of course, knows the system. You've got Fifita and McMillan. You also have a veteran offensive line, which is nice to have. And a good part of that back seven is back. And this is a team that, now let's face it, they were a little fortunate to finish number 11 last year. I thought they maybe not quite as good as that record would indicate. You know, even the Oklahoma Bowl game sort of turned on a few plays. But I like the hire of Brett Brennan. He's a coach. I talked to him his first year. He was in a first-year head coach with first-year coordinators and a team bereft of talent and really built that San Jose team. Well, steps into a much better situation here with 15 returning starters if you include the transfers. So I've got them right at that total, and I would consider them a Big 12 contender. Like I said, had they not lost Fish and had they not lost some key players to the portal in Washington, they might be the preseason favorites to win the Big 12.
Yeah, and, you know, I think maybe some listeners of this podcast know, but I don't think many people realize how hard that San Jose State job is. And he did a really good job over the years there, getting to a couple of bowl games. And most recently, you know, last year having that run where they were a bit upset not to get into the Mountain West Championship game. You have a portion in your mag where you call for the roulette chip, right? Your kind of roll of the dice. And I talked about it a couple weeks ago here on this podcast, Phil, where I took what we deem a pizza bet, just a couple bucks, see how it goes on KJ Jefferson to win the Heisman Trophy at 150-1. He goes into UCF, and I feel like this is the ultimate high upside, but they could fall apart type of team in this Big 12. The defense has questions, but the offense, when you look at KJ Jefferson coming in from Arkansas, Gus Malzahn mentioning at Big 12 Media Days that he's the closest to Cam Newton that he's coached since Cam back in 2010. They get Penny Boone to pair with RJ Harvey. I mean, they just have a whole bunch of big bodies running at you in that backfield. Kobe Hudson's a really talented wide receiver. So UCF's a team that is sitting around, 950 or so, plus 950 to win this conference. What's your expectations of the Knights heading into this year?
Yeah, and as I touched on earlier, they're one of the 10 teams I said had really a shot at the Big 12, and you stole my thunder, Tim. I was going to use the Cam Newton analogy there.
Well, Gus Malzahn stole your thunder.
There you go. KJ Jefferson is the closest you look to Cam Newton, and Jefferson was not 100% last year. If you watched the games, you saw he wasn't 100%, especially like the LSU game didn't look that great and struggled, and so I think having him back 100% is huge. Having Harvey in the backfield, as you mentioned, Kobe Hudson, and then the amount of transfers they brought in. I mean, Deshaun Pace coming in at linebacker from Cincinnati. He is one of the better linebackers in the entire country. They bring in Ethan Barr from Vanderbilt at linebacker. They bring in some top-notch, you know, Ladarius Tennyson at cornerback from star position from Ole Miss as an NFL-type guy. A lot of transfers coming in. I think this is like an all-or-nothing year for Malzahn. And last year, I thought they were the best of the American teams that came in. I said that constantly, and they were. But now they're even better. And I rate them number 6 most improved. Better depth thanks to the transfers. And I think they've got a shot this year if things break their way. Now, they do have to play TCU on the road. The Florida game on the road is not a conference game, which is good. Iowa State on the road, I think, is going to be tough. And West Virginia. I think West Virginia is going to be a very tough out. And they play Utah at home. But they could surprise some folks this year.
Yeah, and I'm not speaking for you. I'm speaking for me. If I were to bet UCF, I would rather take those kind of long shots on UCF because I think the ceiling's high, but I do think win total, you get into kind of a muckiness there at 7.5, which seems to be the right number. We haven't hit on them yet. The most polarizing team, not only in the Big 12, but in college football, that is Colorado. Year one of Coach Prime, 4-8, got off to the great start before running into a buzzsaw there in the Big 12. And, you know, I like what they did in the portal. I think Coach Prime is learning how to be a head coach at this level. But I'll say this, Phil, when you look at their schedule, the Big 12 did them no favors, where you've got at UCF, Kansas State, at Arizona, Texas Tech, Utah, Kansas, Oklahoma State. Who's missing? BYU, who's missing? Houston, Arizona State. So they have a really challenging schedule heading into this year. Win totals at 6. Essentially, it's will they or won't they get bowl eligible? What do we expect from the Buffs this year, year two of Coach Prime?
You know, last year was a completely new team. They were number 133 on my experience chart, and it was all transfer portal guys. This year, they're up to number 48 on my experience chart. So they're much more experienced, plus they brought in a bunch of transfers. So the potential's there for them to be better. But if I've got 6 as my over-under, I'm going to play the under in that one. I think when you look at them last year, you go back to that Colorado State game that they won. Very lucky to win that. They were down by 2 scores late in the fourth quarter. Somehow, some way, won it in overtime. If you watch the Nebraska game against them, I thought Nebraska controlled the first 28 minutes of that game. And then a couple of key plays changed momentum, and all of a sudden it turned completely different. I wasn't blown away with Colorado last year in any of their wins. I mean, the Arizona State game, the TCU game, maybe they took the Frogs by surprise, catching a team that had just played in a national title. It was a 3-touchdown favorite against them. I think everybody's going to be prepared for Colorado this year. And you touched on it. They play the second toughest schedule in the Big 12 this year. So I'm going under the 6. There's talent there. Shadur Sanders, Travis Hunter. I mean, they've got some stars, but you win games at the line of scrimmage. They've got 5 new offensive linemen once again. And I think it's going to be tough to win with constantly shuffling the offensive line like they did.
All right, one more team for me from the Big 12, and I do want to sneak in an ACC question for you. The Houston Cougars, this is a team that you pick to finish last in this conference. And look, I'll start with this. I love the Willie Fritz hire. I think it was really smart. I think it's a good move long term. But we talk schedule, right? And you look at this schedule, no Arizona State on this schedule, no BYU on this schedule. You got to go on the road to Cincinnati, which is always kind of a funky place to play. So the win total's 3.5, Phil, but also you could go to DraftKings and play the win total for conference wins at 2.5. And I look at this schedule and I'm saying, Phil, I don't see 3 conference wins coming for Houston with the challenges that are on this schedule.
Yeah, and you know, Willie Fritz is a hell of a coach. Agreed. But keep in mind, he's had 3 years at Tulane where they struggled even prior to them taking off. And having the final 2 years that they did at Tulane, he was 2-10 in 2021. His first 2 years at Tulane, they were just 4-8 and 5-7. And I told you I'd go through and do who I'd have favored, who I have an underdog. I actually have Houston an underdog in all 8 Big 12 games this year. So that's something to look at, would be the under in that respect. Now, I do like Donovan Smith at quarterback. They've got some talent. You know they're going to be able to run the ball if they've got Willie Fritz there. But the offensive line only has 1 starter back. The defense brings in a ton of transfers. I think it's a rebuilding year for Houston, and you touched on it. That schedule is one where what game they're going to be favored in the Big 12?
I mean, maybe Baylor.
Baylor, and I've got him a 3-point dog in that game because I think Baylor's much better. But, yeah, that could be the one game. I would go under 2.5 definitely for the Big 12 this year.
Yeah, no, I would too. And that brings me to my last one for you, circling back to a best bet I gave out last week on the podcast, going to the ACC. And, you know, Duke is a team that surprised many under Mike Elko. Remember, they opened up last year as a, you know, almost a 2-touchdown dog at home, and they went outright against Clemson. But you bring in Manny Diaz as Elko leaves. You lose your quarterback in Riley Leonard. You lose your leading rusher in Jordan Waters. You lose 2 of your best sack getters in Peebles and Oben. And then I look at the schedule, and this is what I discussed, Phil, which is, you know, sometimes you can get creative, and the non-con seems pretty manageable for Duke, right? You play Elon, Northwestern, UConn, and Middle Tennessee, and you're a favorite in 3 and a toss-up against Northwestern. But then I look at their conference schedule, and on that conference schedule, you play FSU, you play NC State, Miami, SMU, Virginia Tech. I mean, I don't know how many games you have them a favorite in conference, but I think this could be a really challenging conference slate for Duke. That's why ultimately I played under 2.5 conference wins for the Blue Devils. What do you make of that 8-game ACC portion of the Duke schedule?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there 100%, Tim. And I think a lot of times they have to set the line at a certain area based on where the team had finished the last couple of years. And you're talking about a Duke team that had 9 and 8 wins. They bring in Malik Murphy from Texas. They've got Jordan Moore, wide receiver. So there is some talent there, but they go from number 3 on my experience chart. They were one of the most experienced teams in the country last year, all the way down to number 108. Once again, go back and check that blog out on philsteele.com from last week, where it talks about the experience chart versus last year's experience chart. Generally, teams that have that big of a drop-off do have a major drop-off the next year. I think it's a rebuilding year for Manny Diaz, and I thought Mike Elko got the absolute most you could possibly get from Duke the last 2 years, getting them to 17 wins. This may be a one where they don't catch the breaks they had. The Clemson game, for example, caught a lot of breaks to win that one last year. And I actually am an underdog in all 8 ACC wow. games. So I'm going to agree with you 100% there. Closest one might be at Wake Forest, but playing Virginia Tech at home, SMU at home, Florida State at home, North Carolina at home, they'll be a dog in all those games. And frankly, I don't think they deserve to be a road favorite. So 100% that under 2.5, that's like stealing, isn't it, Tim?
Well, we hope we can cash it at the end of the year. And also, one thing that I look at too is the rest advantage. They don't get any rest advantage because their 2 bye weeks, the opponents that they play are both coming off bye weeks too. So I just think for a schedule standpoint for Manny Diaz, they could very well be 4-0 heading into ACC play, but it's going to be a challenge for them to get the bowl eligibility. And that's why ultimately I thought it was better to go under conference wins than it was the full win total, which used to be, Phil, 6.5. And, the wise guys came in and banged that down to 5.5.
Makes sense. Yeah, I saw that early 6.5. I'm like, really? Yeah. Duke 7 wins this year?
Yeah, that one looked like a little bit of a stretch. Phil, always love picking your brain at PhilSteele042. Check him out on Twitter there and also PhilSteele.com. And if you're out and about, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million to get the preseason magazine if you haven't already grabbed it. Phil, always love it and appreciate the time.
Hey, a lot of fun as always, Tim. Enjoyed talking football with you once again.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Thanks again for Phil Steele for joining the podcast, and appreciate him jumping on the podcast multiple times during this offseason. PhilSteele.com. Make sure you check out the website and grab the preseason magazine. Speaking of preseason publications, the VSiN College Football Betting Guide coming out later this week on Thursday. So make sure you head on over to VSiN.com. And I have a couple best bets in there, as well as write-ups on the independents. Yes, I was tasked with a massive duty of 3 teams in the preseason guide, and that's probably fair. That should be where I should be looking. If you're looking for an in-depth preview of Notre Dame, I'm not going to do it here because I've done it already on the podcast. Go check it out. June 13th was the podcast. I did it prior to my chat with Paul Stone. So if you want my analysis on the Irish, you can go check it out there and also read about it on the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. I'm not going to go too crazy in depth here on UConn and UMass, but just want to hit some bullet points. These are the teams that I did write up. UConn's win total, 4.5. UMass win total sitting at 3.5. For UConn, interesting wrinkle here for Jim Mora's squad. Year 3 for Jim Mora coming back there with UConn. A surprise season back in 2022, making it to a bowl game. Won a couple of games as massive underdogs. A 3-touchdown underdog to Fresno State. A 2-touchdown underdog against Liberty. They won both of those games. They also beat UMass back in 2022. But this is a team that I'm excited for the hire that they brought in from the defensive side. They brought in Matt Brock, who is the defensive coordinator from Mississippi State just a year ago. They do lose their offensive coordinator in Nick Charlton. He heads off to the Cleveland Browns, and that was a pretty nice hire. I think the schedule gets easier. Last year, they had to face Duke, Tennessee, and James Madison. All were ranked at the time. I look at the schedule this year. I don't anticipate them playing any ranked teams. And they play home games from September 21st to November 1st. 6 consecutive home games there at the Rent in Hartford, Connecticut. They do play an FCS team in Merrimack. They play a quasi-FCS team in Temple. I look at this schedule, and I think UConn has a legitimate shot of making a bowl game and also, eclipsing their win total, which is sitting at 4.5. The offense, they do lose a decent amount. Taquan Roberson was their starting quarterback. He moves off to Kansas State in the transfer portal. Justin Jolly was their leading wide receiver. He goes to NC State. Cam Ross moves to James Madison. Their starting center heads off to Colorado. And also, you're not going to see it all that often, but UConn actually had an All-American a year ago. Christian Haynes, right guard, was drafted in the third round by the Seattle Seahawks. But the offense does bring back their top two rushers, Cam Edwards and Victor Rosa. Both return over 1,100 yards on the ground a year ago. Joey Fagnano is back. He got injured in the second game of the season last year, and he was sidelined due to an injury. So something to keep in mind there. Missed, I believe, all of spring, but should be back for the start of the season. Offensive coordinator is someone they promoted from within. They promoted their offensive line coach to OC to replace Nick Charlton. So there is some continuity there, but Fagnano was with Charlton at FCS Maine, and he had some pretty big numbers there. They bring in Nick Evers from Wisconsin to compete for the starting job, but ultimately I think it will be Fagnano. Mora was busy in the portal, bringing in some P5 transfers, TJ Sheffield, Skylar Bell from Wisconsin, and also brought in Josiah Gathings from Akron, who was a second-team All-MAC selection just a year ago. Defensively, Jim Mora, first time since he's been at UConn, he's going to give up defensive play calling, and he brings in Matt Brock, who coached under Mike Leach, rest in peace, and then was hired as a defensive coordinator, promoted to defensive coordinator there at Mississippi State. They replaced that staff, and now Matt Brock is here at UConn. They bring it back 58% of their production from a year ago, according to Bill Conley, SP Plus. So, look, I look at this team. Secondary should bring back three starters. You've got an upgrade at defensive coordinator. I haven't made the bet, but I do think over 4.5 wins would be the look for me with this schedule and the fact that they have a unique quirk of 6 consecutive home games. And, you know, I've already talked about Duke. I think Duke is vulnerable in that third week of the season. The betting market is betting on UConn week one. Now, not to win outright, but just pointing that out. So UConn and Jim Mora, I do think is maybe worth an overplay. And I do think, to be honest, the November 30th game in Amherst is probably going to be the differentiator for both of these teams for their win total. UMass is sitting at 3.5, their win total. Their schedule, a little bit more challenging than UConn. They play Georgia, Mississippi State, and Missouri. So 3 SEC teams are on UMass's schedule. Compare that to UConn, where they have 4 Power 5 teams or Power 4 teams, but none of the caliber of Missouri or Georgia on the schedule. UMass headed to the MAC next year, so I think it will be good for that program. Don Brown is their head coach. He was their head coach when they made a run to the FCS championship back in, I think, 2007. And then he left, was a Power 4 coordinator at a number of stops, including Maryland and Michigan, Arizona most recently. A year ago, they won 3 games. And you might be thinking to yourself, wow, 3 games. Way to go, UMass. It's the most wins they had since 2018. So you look at this schedule. They play 5 teams from the MAC. They play 3 SEC teams. They do get a pair of FCS foes in Central Connecticut State and Wagner. They should win both of those games. So can they win a game? Can they win 2 games against MAC foes is the big question. Week 1, they're a pick'em against Eastern Michigan. They do play Liberty, which will be a significant underdog at home against Liberty in late November. But Tyson Pumichon is back. He was once upon a time a 4-star recruit at Clemson. He went to Georgia Tech last year. He played in 9 games, had a big game in their Week 0 victory over New Mexico State, dealt with a knee injury, missed out on the spring this past year. UMass's best player was Kayron Lynch Adams. He ran for over 1,100 yards. Guess what happened? He's not there anymore. He got poached by Michigan State, their second leading rusher. He moved on to Memphis. Their second leading receiver moved on to Florida Atlantic. Their starting right tackle moved on to Charlotte. Offensive line in totality, you're going to have to replace 3 starters. And you look at the leading wide receiver a year ago, Anthony Simpson, does return. 57 catches, 792 yards. Don Brown brought in a bunch of pieces from the portal. We'll see if they hit. Frank Ladson from Miami, Sterling Galvin from Texas Tech, and then I think Dominic Mazzotti from San Jose State. I think he should be a pretty good weapon. 20 starts at San Jose State over his career. Frank Ladson, I mentioned that. He started at Clemson, played at Miami just a year ago. Did lose some pieces on defense to the portal. Their leading tackler, Najee Logan, he moves on to Indiana. Billy Wooden, who had 6.5 sacks a year ago, he graduated, went to the portal, got a couple P4 transfers. And what's going to be interesting, they got a couple really productive Ivy Leaguers in Macklin Ayers and Leonard St. Gordon. They should both start for this defense. Ayers is a linebacker. St. Gordon is a safety. So, look, I know it's bleak. I just felt like I'd run through what I did here on the back end of the Independence preview. UConn and UMass, two teams that nobody really knows much about, and rightfully so. But I actually do think both teams are decent this year. I think they're getting better. I think for UMass, it's good for them to head to the MAC next year. Don Brown, you know, for the sake of that program, hopefully he can get them to 4 wins for the first time, I believe, since 2018. But I still don't understand this, and maybe someone can answer it to me. How in the world is Missouri going to UMass? Just think about that. An SEC team, a top 25 program, a team who won a New Year's Six Bowl a year ago, is going to, in the middle of conference play, travel to Amherst, Massachusetts to take on Missouri. One of the more bizarre scheduling snafus out there. So there you go. Make sure you check out the guide. Great stuff from Adam Burke, Zachary Cohen, Steve Mackinnon, JVT, Matt Eumanns, Wes Reynolds, and we'll have best bets as well from all of the VSiN personalities in that guide. So make sure you check that out. Head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks again to Phil Steele for jumping on the podcast. And I will be back next week, and we will probably be grabbing some of the VSiN writers that work diligently on this VSiN college football guide to help preview much more as we get closer and closer to the start of the college football season. August is here, and we are rock and rolling heading into week 0, where we got a handful of games ready to go, including a game in Ireland between Georgia Tech and Florida State. Follow me on Twitter at @1TimMurray, and please hit us with a 5-star review. It really helps out the podcast, and you guys have been doing an awesome job all throughout the offseason. We'll talk to you next week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.